You like that? You like that Hoedown song, New Guy? I like it too. By the way, that symbol, that Showdown Hoedown symbol, I hope that you're checking out those leaderboards, because we're pretty used to seeing that little avatar at the top of leaderboards of golf, but I got to tell you, I saw it quite a bit yesterday on top of some leaderboards for football, because the football content's coming in very strong. Appreciate all those guys in my Discord that freaking support the cause and put that up at the top of leaderboards. Plus, you know, all that money probably doesn't piss them off. For all of you that don't know, I'm the Degenerate 75. I'm a high-limit DFS player. I focus on golf and football. Today, we're going to be talking football, specifically the Monday Night Football slate, which is two games, which is fucking badass. Because a single-game slate is fun, but a two-game slate is perfect. So much more strategy involved. Very excited to break it down. Hopefully, give you a couple pointers, because I ain't going to give you a single fucking pick. I'm just going to give you some ideas, and you're going to make your own damn cake. And then eat it. All right, cool. So I've got my dude, as always, John Gold, JD, on here. He's going to help me break it down. How you doing, John?
What's up? Good morning. Yeah, like you said, two-game slates are awesome. These, like, for the playoffs or, like, Thanksgiving or those type of slates where you get two or three games, they're a ton of fun.
Yep. And don't you ever say good morning to me again. I hate being up this early. What the hell I'm doing? I'm looking over here on the recorder right now. I look like fucking I've never been up this early in my life. And maybe I haven't. Maybe I have never been up this early. So... fuck, how you normal people do this shit, kudos to you, you mother fathers, because I don't know how. It's just pure courage and cold brew getting me through this right now.
I've been up for 4 and change hours. Let's go.
Get out of here. All right, let's talk a little contest selection tonight. What do you think of the big $20 that they have up? And by they, I mean DraftKings. 44.4% to first. You feeling that, big guy?
It's brutal. Like you just said, it's absolutely brutal. That said, I'm going to fire some lineups. I'll probably put 25 in this, but the lineups I put in this will be some of my more contrarian lineups, because I do want a shot at taking down that first place money.
Yeah.
There's not a ton of spots to get unique here tonight, but I think there is, roster construction wise, some ways to get unique.
Hey, a lot more chances to get unique tonight than there is in a one game slate. Am I right?
I mean, unless you're playing Justin Watson, but yeah.
Hey, I got to tell you, man, I've really started to like this $3.20 max. I feel like no matter what level of player you are, this is just a great tournament to play in. You know, $30,000 up top is very good. 10th place is $3,000. Love that. And, you know, you can max it for $60. Like, you know, that's a decent amount to invest for a lot of casual players. And I just love this 20 max. You got any takes on it?
Yeah, it's one of the best for, like you said, for any price point, but really for people building a bankroll, it's totally an affordable price point. It always has a good structure. They usually have, you know, a variant of this tournament for every slate.
You know what I found with these 20 maxes? I like to kind of have my core of three or four guys, and I'll literally put them in 100% of my lineups and then go mix and match the other spots. So when those 20 do hit, when that core hits, I have 20 legit shots to maybe take down the GPP.
Exactly. Yeah. This is the one to get really, really tight cores in.
Yeah. Play a tight player pool. Plus, you know, you just, other ones, you know, like you just can't go wrong with the single entries. The thing you need to remember, new guy, is single entries, three maxes, 20 maxes, five maxes. What makes them so great is that if you max them out, which you should, if you're going to play in them, play the max number allowed, rather that's single, three, five, or 20, is you're playing the same amount of lineups as everybody else in it. You're not playing guys who are max 150 guys and they have tons more leverage. I just think that's a really important lesson, because they're already probably better. They're definitely better players than you if they're maxing 150, right? And you don't want to be playing better players when they have five times more lineups than you. John, you going to agree with me on that?
Sometimes I'll fire less. Like, I'm probably going to do 25 in the $20, but as a general rule, it is preferable to put in the most entries, and the contests you identified are some of the best structured contests.
Are you going to say, I understand you are probably a little bit richer than most of the people listening to this show. So you can afford to take some punts in this $20, put 25 in it, even if it's a negative EV play, because you got that kind of bankroll. But if you got somebody,
I'm lighting $500 on fire. Let's
okay, that's clear. What you got to remember. We're preaching to the we're preaching to the masses here. Okay, they're not. You know, we're trying to help people be sustainable and not be, you know, like, you know, fucking losers. You basically lose right off the bat when you play in those.
Yeah, it's the structure's so bad. It really is. The payout structure's so bad. I mean, this would be a fun tournament if it wasn't a guaranteed millie to first. Yep. If this was just a flat structure, you know, where they paid $225K to first or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. 250 would be awesome. Quarter million would be perfect.
This would be an awesome tournament. Yep. But as is, it's pretty much.
But they got to put the million up top to draw in the fishies. All right.
Exactly.
Let's get over to the optimizer. By the way, go like and sub, you mother father. We're growing. We're up past 1,400 now. Some people have said, some great scholars said, we should push for 1,500. So you know what? We're going to listen to those scholars and we're going to do it. This is called Run the Sims. If you don't know, we basically, this whole football part of this channel is run by, or powered by Run the Sims. If you're not using tools at fantasy football, what the fuck are you doing with your life? Me and John, we swear by it. They have a 10% off code. If you just put in DGEN75, DEGEN75, and you'll get 10% off, and, it supports the cause. So there you go. Let's talk about this slate tonight, man. Let's talk about the two games, and then we'll talk about go position by position. What do you say?
Yeah, that's awesome. And real quick on Run the Sims, it is even more useful on a two-game or a three-game, like a small slate like this, or even Showdown, it's awesome for. But you can see, as you change different inputs, how drastically different players show up in the optimal rates. Like, you'll see back in on DGEN's screen here, the projected optimal rate for some of these guys, and you have to question 58% optimal rate for Derrick Henry, and I saw that this morning when I was looking at the default settings, and I'm like, okay, so what is driving that to make him occur 58% of the time? And if you look, I mean, he handles just such a big percentage of his team's rush, and his team's way they want to win is to rush, and so the inputs, the generic inputs, and Run the Sims, you know, project him out that way. But if you decide that, you know, Buffalo's pass or rush defense is so strong that they're going to bottle up Derrick Henry, we'll run a sim where, you know, the Buffalo or rush offense never gets going, and you can see how his projected opt rate just plummets. So that's a super fun way to use Run the Sims.
Or just go put in if you think Buffalo blows them out and Tennessee is going to be playing from behind, go change the inputs to have Buffalo have a bigger score, Tennessee to have a smaller score, and Tennessee to have a higher percentage of their plays be pass instead of run. And that will also dramatically decrease his optimizer rate.
Yeah, exactly. And so it's just a way for, you know, I don't have as computer modeling skills to be able to do this myself, but Run the Sims has built a user-friendly inputs. And if you want to show it real quick, if you go up to DFS Tools, DIY Simulator, and you can see on the screen when you go to that.
Not even logged in.
Oh, my bad. I'm sorry. Okay, so, but once we log in, we can do it on another video. Or if you belong to our Discord, we'll show it on our Discord. You can change all the inputs from, like you said, you know, how often they rushed versus how often they passed, who on the team does the rushing and what percentages, who does the passing is usually pretty obvious, who does the catching, interception rate, field goal. Like, you can manipulate almost every input you can think of on a game, player by player, and then simulate out the slate to see, you know, what occurs the most often. And so, yeah, super fun way to use the tool.
I guess they're just going to get to see my login. There you go. You're getting to see it anyways, you mother fathers. I'm logging in. I'm committed to the process at this point. Trust me. I have a login. I'm not stealing the internet off somebody. All right, do-it-yourself simulator. You were talking about right here, inputs.
Yeah, well, once you select our
slate.
DraftKings.
Let's see, tonight's slate, Monday, inputs. And you just go over
so
here.
You can see here, Derrick Henry is projected for 75% of his team's carries. And 70% of his team's rushing touchdowns, and his team is projected up here. You're highlighting, 45% of their plays are projected to be rushing, and of their total scoring, almost 40% of their total scoring is rushing. So
I'm dropping.
What that's basically saying,
I'm dropping them down to 14 points scored and only a 41% rush rate. And when you do that, you run the Sims. I bet Derrick Henry will not be number one anymore. Yeah, now Derrick Henry. He drops
down to 49.
Out. Yeah, so that dropped him. That dropped him. What? Almost a cool 10% right there, just by doing that.
Below Cook
and below Diggs.
But what's interesting about that is you can drop it. You can do it even more, because if they do not have success rushing, which I think Buffalo has a very stout rush defense. So, you know, Derek, anyone's gonna have success, it'll be the big dog. But say the rushing game doesn't get there and never really gets going. Drop it down to rush rate down to 20%.
Inputs, rush,
and really, it's not saying they're going to rush only 20%, but this is just more showing like efficiency in my mind. What I'm trying to change there.
So, by the way, it's running the sim like 5 to 10,000 times, and it does it that quick. Now, Jesus,
yeah, all the way down to 31%. 30%.
All right, so there you
go. So it's just a really fun way to use the tool. So now we can talk through the games. But yeah, if you're not using Run the Sims and you want to try it out, they have like weekly stuff. Use DGen's code, DGen75. It's an awesome tool and worth trying out if you haven't played with it before.
It was good to me yesterday. It got me on old Goff and Lamar. It was basically saying, hey, these guys are going to be in optimals a lot more than what they're going to be owned. I was like, well, fucking sign me up then, Bob.
Exactly. Yeah, that's a great way to use it for main slate.
All right, let's start with Buffalo, Tennessee. So the over unders on both these games are relatively high. They're, you know, I think there'll be some points scored tonight. Do you, if there was like one of these two games that you were going to favor over the other, do you have one?
Well, so one thing I'm looking at when I look at the spreads here and the over unders is the despite like a fairly close over unders 47.5 versus 50.5. The Buffalo being favored by 10 points just worries me from a DFS perspective. And I know Buffalo isn't necessarily a team to take their foot off the gas. They have no problem blowing teams out of the water. But it's just the way the fantasy scoring happens and the chances for a shootout. I think your chances for a shootout are much more likely in this Minnesota-Philly game.
Absolutely. But, you know, like, there's also the chance that, like, Tennessee is a lot more competitive. You know, I love the narrative that anytime there's an NFL team going to Buffalo, they have no chance, they're going to get blown out. How often does that really happen? Like, NFL teams have so much, like, they're professionals. Like, there's a good chance that Tennessee comes in there and is very competitive. If they can be competitive and move the ball on offense, this game, this will be the less owned game, in my opinion. And it's the game that you can get leverage on if you can just get Tennessee to, you know, keep it competitive.
Yeah, I think if you are playing Buffalo stacks, I wouldn't be playing Buffalo stacks without someone on the Tennessee side of the ball. In a two-game slate, just naturally when you build, it'll occur more often. But I would make a conscious effort to be thinking about, because if you're playing Buffalo guys, one, they're expensive, so you need a higher scoring than, you know, some of the other sides of the ball. But two, given a blowout script, there is a chance that some of these guys don't come out and play their full workload. Or that they give some of the younger guys, like if they get up by 20, I doubt, it looks like it's probably going to be James Cook get some opportunity or Moss get some opportunity over Singletary. But if it's a tight game, you can see Singletary staying and playing his role most of the game. So yeah, I see you're looking at some of the injuries here on Gabe Davis and Kyle Phillips. And those will both be ones to monitor today.
They're huge ones to monitor. I feel like if either one of those guys are out, it really changes the dynamic of who becomes the best plays tonight, right?
Yeah, you'll have a lot of new value opening up. Like, I assume if Gabe Davis goes down, both Isaiah McKenzie and
Crowder
would be a lot better plays. And Kyle Phillips, I think then maybe Bobby Trees becomes a better play. Basically any of the pass catchers, because Kyle Phillips had most of the targets last week in a fairly low pass volume offense. So that would be
Are you a Treylon Burks truther if our dude Kyle Phillips is out? Because I guarantee you
I'm probably going to play him either way. I'm big on rookie wide receivers generally. I think they're someone to get high on early in the season before the general public does, because their roles will continue to grow. And we've seen so many of these talented first-year wide receivers come in and have smash spots. So
right. And then I go over here. It doesn't look like there's much injury concern over here in this Philly-Minnesota game. What are your initial takeaways from this? This game just, you know, everybody's going to think it's going to be – everybody thinks it's going to be a shootout. Could the play just be like, just plan on it not being a shootout, and that's a way to just be super different from the field?
Oh, I think when you're building, roster construction is huge here. So if you're going to go heavy on the first game, I think you want to think about how this game fails and then be building that way. So, you know, maybe Philly's defense just comes out and shuts down Minnesota, and Minnesota never gets going, and all Philly has to do is run the ball, which is, you know, how they'd love to win the game. And so if I was playing heavy on the first game, I think I like Philly defense paired with Philly rushers in the second game, because that's the way that game could fail. Or conversely, you know, Minnesota comes out and Jalen Hurts just, you know, doesn't shine like he did, and you play Minnesota's defense and Cooks.
You say Philly's rushers. Who the hell's their rushers? I mean, like, they, like, last game they had three rushing touchdowns. Actually, I think they have four rushing touchdowns, but Hurts was one. Their running backs had three, and it was all three of them.
That's why I said rushers. I think you pick, like, one and go with it.
But which one would you play? Surely you're not saying
I would go Sanders. No. I probably wouldn't play two of them together. But I would say I would probably play Sanders as my first choice. I would also play Gainwell. I think Gainwell is probably the more talented back at this point. And so, yeah, and I probably wouldn't be playing Boston Scott. But I mean, maybe in that Millie, if you wanted to get a little cray, you could play Boston Scott, and maybe he falls into the end zone twice, and right. He's definitely going to be optimal.
Right now, we just have the generic inputs in there, right? If you want to make your own, go make your own. But like this is, we're just going to use generic because, like, you know, you should pay to use their site. So here you go. Optimizer rate. I found this to be hilarious. The four most highly over leveraged players. All that is you take their projected ownership and then you look at their optimizer rate and you subtract those two. Hopefully, you get a positive number because they're more optimized than people are going to own them, and that's called a leverage play. But we're looking at the negative leverage plays, and 1, 2, 3 on the list are all Philly pass catchers: Devontae Smith, Dallas Goedert, and AJ Brown. Is Run the Sims just on my theory that Jalen Hurts can't feed all these mouths?
I think that's exactly what it's showing you. It's showing you that the pass volume that is being projected versus how often these guys are going to be owned, that when you sim out, there's just not enough pass volume to support the ownership that the field's going to have. It's not saying that one of these guys won't get there on any given slate, but it's saying how often the field is owning them. Any individual one of these guys isn't getting there that often.
What about like a Jalen Hurts Quez Watkins stack, and that's it, and you just hope Jalen Hurts is running the ball a lot, getting some rushing touchdowns, and he throws his one passing touchdown to Quez Watkins? Is that getting too cute?
But I might throw a runner in there, so then you could do Jalen Hurts, Quez Watkins, and Miles Sanders. Or
does Gainwell catches a lot of screens, doesn't he? Don't they like to get him the ball in space?
That's exactly what I was just trying to think of. So you can do Gainwell, Jalen Hurts, and Quez Watkins, and you're getting very different on a Hurts stack. But you have an opportunity to capture every touchdown that team scores, right? You think Jalen Hurts run one's in, he throws one to Quez Watkins deep, and then Gainwell on a screen, and that's all the scoring in that game.
And if you're sitting there thinking, but what are the chances that's going to happen? I don't know, maybe 1 in 100, but like if it does, I guarantee you probably only 1 in 10,000 people are going to have that stack.
Yeah, that's the whole point, is doing something that happens more often than the field is owning it.
Right.
And low probability events are just naturally going to be owned less by the field, because one of the biggest DFS like mistakes people make is being sure of how a game will play out. Like in general, like humans suck at predicting things. And so like I can tell you,
what about 42% owned Cincinnati defense last week? Yesterday,
like I said, I played absolutely zero.
Morons. So. You're a moron if you played them.
And look, were they in a smash spot? Fuck yes, they're in a smash spot versus Cooper Rush, right? I mean, they're playing against a backup quarterback, like a fairly decent defense, which evidently maybe isn't the case. But from the outside looking in, that's a smash spot. But what happened was they were projected to be 25% owned. So you're saying they hit a ceiling score more than 25%, and none of the other teams also hit a ceiling score that are lower owned. It's just like that doesn't occur 1 in 4 times on an NFL slate. Like NFL is just variable to begin with, and there's 12 games going on main slate yesterday.
Silliness.
They weren't going to be the nuts 25% of the time or more.
Right. But they were cheap. I need a cheap defense. There's other cheap defenses, Dickie. That's the point. Okay.
I played plenty of cheapy defenses.
Yeah,
and,
I did too. Some of them did well. I had a lot of Cardinals defense, and I didn't even see how they won the game, but I noticed I jumped up a lot of money at the end. Did they get like a pick six or something to end it? I was golfing.
They fumble recovery for a touchdown.
I jumped up a few hundred bucks, and I was like, what the hell happened in that game? Because I figured I was under-leveraged in that game, and I was definitely under-leveraged in that game, except on the defense.
That was definitely a game to be good to be under-leveraged, or looked to be great to be under-leveraged on for a while.
Yeah, when it was like, it was like 17-0 or something like that for a long time? I was trying to check
it
on my phone.
Yeah, it was kind of slow, and Arizona did nothing for the first half, so it was an opportunity to really make up some ground, because the field loved that game. But anyways, this is save for our review show. Tune into our show tomorrow and check out our review show.
Absolutely. Slate review, where we're going to talk shit about them. Yeah, we do that every Tuesday. We do Monday night football, Thursday night football. We do a Tuesday preview and a Saturday final thought. So come tune in for all those. We're content monsters, and we're growing. By the way, if you ever want to know, John puts out all of his sims and projections and ownership, which is really good, and it's all over on our Discord. You can connect to it. We had like 15 people sign up this weekend. We're pushing to 300 quick. Come check it out. It's pretty cool. We do golf and football over there. You have direct access to us, and we're going to turn around after this and go make a way better video for them. So if you're interested in that, come check it out, because we're pretty smart cats. All right, so let's just get into specific plays. Who do you like tonight? Who are some guys that you're looking to target and some guys you're looking to fade? And then we'll just kind of leave it at that.
Well, so the injury situations will be really big in that first game. So an hour and a half before kickoff, I'll definitely be getting my final thoughts going on that game. And so I guess early, it's not really about guys that I don't like. It's really going to be about how guys fit together. And just like Shodan, I think you do need to be thinking about how games play out in order for build and to build rosters that make sense. And so I guess initially, like early takes, I think I like the Tennessee passing line. Like, you know, Buffalo is going to do their thing, and I think that's an offense that probably isn't going to be stopped. So in terms of ceiling, I think they probably have the biggest ceiling on the slate on the Buffalo side of the ball. And I think Diggs, if especially if Gabe Davis is going to be out, I think Diggs just is in a total smash spot. But you're going to need someone from Tennessee to do their part. And so either you play the big dog and think the big dog eats versus this Buffalo defense, which actually isn't a spot I really like at all. I like the pass catchers on Tennessee. So if Tennessee's trailing, Buffalo does their thing, and Tennessee's just going to have to chuck, right? And so,
right.
I think I like the Treylon Burks or Bobby Trees.
I know this is a weird correlation, but if Gabe Davis is out, does that somehow add any more value to the Buffalo running backs?
I think it definitely helps Singletary. I think Singletary could get more interior work, or I guess McKenzie probably just keeps his slot role. But, I can see Singletary getting a slightly more opportunities in the passing game.
For sure. All right, so Derrick Henry. Do you think
I'm generally out on Derrick Henry? I guess I'll wait and see what his ownership is. But Derrick Henry, I'm generally out on unless he's going to be really low owned, which in a two-game slate, I just can't imagine with our limited running back options, he's going to be low owned.
With Cook and Henry, how many lineups do you think will start Cook and Henry? Because I think it will be like less than 5%. I don't think people are going to want to go double spend up at running back tonight because it forces them into some punts elsewhere. And with those two guys being the obvious bell cows of this game, are you feeling that start at all, or is that just not a way you could ever build your lineup?
I haven't built lineups yet to see what it makes me do with the rest of my lineups, but my initial gut is that would push me into a lineup I wouldn't be comfortable with. So I think if I were to play one of those two on the expensive running back side of the ball, it would probably be Cook. But like I said, I haven't built lineups yet, but my initial gut reaction is to pay down at running back on this slate, take some gambles that's not where the points are scored, and that if there's a bunch of flat scoring and like all these guys score 15 or less, you aren't going to want to waste the salary on those expensive guys.
All right, and then let me ask you this question that I'm dying to know. Of the three big pass catchers in Philly, Smith, Goddard, Brown, if you had to pick one, Jalen Hurts, because my theory is he can only feed one mouth. Well, one mouth at those rates. He could probably feed one of those mouths and Quez Watkins because he just needs one catch to get there. Of those three, which one do you think you feel the most confident gets there?
Well, the most confident gets there is definitely A.J. Brown. I think based on usage last week, talent, narratives coming out of Philly, I think A.J. Brown is the most likely to succeed. But if you ask me who I'm going to play the most of or who I'll be most over-leveraged on the field, I think you know my answer, my man. I'm going to burn more dollars on Smith.
No, the correct answer is I thought you were going to say none of them. I thought that's where you were going. But, yeah, I agree. Devontae, this has him at 42% ownership. I can't wait to see your projected ownership because I just think people overreact. And what do you have, 4 targets, 0 catches last week? I think people are going to buy the narrative that he's the forgotten guy there. So 4,500, give me all the Devontae Smith. I guess that price tag is probably going to make him pretty appealing. It's probably why they have the higher projected ownership.
Yeah, and that's another thing I want to see once I start building lineups because I'm guessing you are going to need some cheapy guys because this isn't a particularly cheap slate looking at some of the pricing. Like there's really not a lot of value options that I see.
Yep.
And so the few value options that are there may end up getting steamed more. And like you said, like normally I could see people just being like, nah, fuck Smith. He had a terrible game last week and just using week one as a complete reason to buy off him or to be off him. But I think the field's generally gotten sharper. And two, I think the value pieces will get pushed up because there aren't very many of them.
Can we go ahead and talk about the quarterback with the highest leverage, according to Run the Sims, Ryan Tannehill, the nuts play. Are you in? Are you going to go with me on Tannehill?
Well, okay, so let me just point out one thing, and he is projected for the highest leverage, meaning the chance of him being optimal versus how often he's owned. He is only projected to be optimal 9% of the time. And so it is a low probability event. It does represent some leverage. But to me, I probably am not going to get there. Kind of like my thoughts yesterday, and it almost got there. Fuck it, Mark Andrews could have scored a little bit more. He would have broke the slate. But But kind of like my thought there with tight end, which was in a position that was kind of devoid of lots of high-end options. If one of the high-end options gets there with just an absolute score that can't be matched, you're gonna have to have him in your lineups to win. I think you're sort of getting to that pace here with the quarterbacks.
He threw another one to him, and it was defensive holding in the end zone, and Andrews would have caught it because he's a beast. If it wasn't defensive holding, he would have got that second touchdown. I think it would have put him over 100 yards, too. It would have been a massive touchdown. I was sweating that one big time.
Yeah, and if he could have got there, like I said, that would have been a slate breaker. And I played over 40%. I think I was at 45 or 50% Andrews.
Boomer Sooner.
If he could have 30 burger, like game over, you would have had to have him. I mean, you probably would have needed Tua and boys too, but fuck, you would have needed Andrews. So, but anyway, so that's how I sort of feel about quarterback today is like you're going to need an elite score there unless everyone's flat. And I don't see there being this being like a super flat slate, I guess. And it's, I mean, it's possible, right? I think your biggest score or biggest upside are obvious Hurts and Allen.
Right.
But if those two guys don't put up a score, then one of the other guys could get there. But in terms of range of outcomes, I think the times where those two put up a score that you need to have occurs a lot more often. So those are the builds I'll be focusing on. I'm not sure I'll get to the other two quarterbacks at all.
All right, so it seems like to me that you need to be playing a narrative tonight. You need to kind of pick how you think these games are going to play out and then build your lineups accordingly. Like a good script could be that Tennessee, you know, is more competitive in this game than they think, and that Philly controls the game and runs the ball a lot. That could be your narrative for how both those games play out. Well, now you have your script to kind of use your player pool to make player pools that would reflect those two scripts happening. That's what you want to do. You want to make lineups that make sense. If you're just picking nine fucking randos and because they fit together in salary, well, then you don't get it, because a lot of times one guy doing well will directly correlate with another guy not doing well. And so you got to think about that when you're making your lineups. Make a well correlated lineup and give yourself a chance to hit if those scripts play out, if you get your scripts right. That's my big takeaway. John, anything before we go?
The last one that I want to say for a two-game slate is the way to get different is to go heavy on one game in particular. So if one of these games is a blowout, or I'm sorry, is a shootout, and one of these games is a slow-paced, low-scoring game, there's a very viable, like, playing whatever, a quarterback, three of his pass catchers or two of his pass catchers are running back, and two or three pieces on the other side, and literally playing like onesies in a defense or something, like a onesie in a defense from the other game.
So basically like an 8-1 or a 7-2, right? Like eight.
Yeah, just heavy, heavy stacking one game versus the other.
Absolutely. All right, man.
Because the field won't do it. The field like feels more comfortable building, you know, four from this, five from that. But that's just not how football plays out a lot of these times.
Hey, I appreciate you being here, John. Guys, come check us out tomorrow. We'll be doing our week two preview and slate review. And then we'll be back Thursday night for Thursday night football or Thursday morning for Thursday night football. And we'll be back Saturday with our final thoughts. I hope you guys kick some ass tonight. If you have any questions, you can always hit me up on Twitter. I try not to big dog anybody. Send me a DM. I hope you do well tonight, and I hope you enjoy my outro. Your mother father.